I see some people are next to the door, whether they are threatened, they are preparing to run away from this meeting. Why can't they come nearer here? What's the problem? Can you come nearer? We are not a threat to anybody. No, those two ladies there. Fidelity Fund, and also Mrs. Lowe from the State Law Attorney's Office. We are here to continue with the responses to the legal practice bill, and I will immediately ask Mr. Bassett to do the necessary.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, members. Honourable members, if I have it correctly, we a week before last we started with our responses, and then we didn't postpone. Then the National Forum came last week, and they submitted proposals that they had in mind. And one of the proposals was that we extend the duration of the National Forum so that they can complete their statutory mandate. I see that there is a document that has been circulated, signed by the chairperson of the National Forum, indicating the extension of time that they would require in order to finish their mandate properly. And we, with your permission, Chair, we will deal with that particular aspect when we get to the clause dealing with it. Where we left off last time was at clause 5 of the bill, which is the proposed amendment to section 96 of the Act. And that particular amendment relates coincidentally to the duration of the National Forum. So if you would approve, Chair, then we would continue with our responses to the issues that were raised at the public hearings, and that brings us to the responses that we would like to give in respect of the issues raised in relation to clause 5 of the book.
Thanks, Chairperson. I was actually thinking that as we look at the request from the chairperson of the National Forum for Extension of Time, they will in the same communication include the planned activities and time frames, and also costing thereof. When they presented before us, they had something that they were actually reading, and he said, "Then this is what we are looking for. It's just a matter of costing it and then sending it to us so that we know what we are actually approving." Thank you, Chairperson.
We need to be able to monitor. I think your proposal will help us to monitor what do they want to do during this period, so that they don't arrive here on that date and then we have another drama that we have seen before. Mr. Bassett.
Thank you, Chair. They haven't done that in the letter that, or the document that's been sent to the Minister. But we do have a document that was given to us informally last time. We could make that available to the committee if you would like it. It sets out in more detail what they're required to do and how long they need to do that.
Are
there's any costing at all that's been done.
Do we want the department to present on that to, or to ask them to send us a program themselves? How do you want us to approach it?
I was thinking that as we're concluding the matter, we'll be having that information that you have requested, and seeing that we don't have that information, maybe we can approve in principle, but saying pending to submission of those documents, so that we understand budgetary requirements of this that we are actually supposed to be supporting in terms of extension.
No, thanks, Chair. I think it would be proper if the proposal that the costing and the program should accompany the request, so that they talk to each other. Because I'm afraid the paper which was presented might have been presented before they knew that they would need an extension, and therefore it might have a problem.
Mutapo.
Chairperson, honourable colleagues, Mr. Bassett, I fully align myself with what Honourable Majaka have said in terms of approval in principle, because really it's true that they need to consult the negotiations in terms of Section 97 of the Legal Practice Act are very much important in terms of transfer of assets. I therefore will align myself with her in terms of approval in principle. And maybe we also give time frames to Mr. Bassett to say maybe within 7-14 days they bring that information.
I think the Honourable Breitenbach.
Thank you. I'm a little hesitant. I agree with the Honourable Maila. I think we should see what we're agreeing to. I'm not terribly keen to give an approval in principle before we see the full picture.
Agree in principle, subject to the submission in 14 days of the program of what they want to do. I'm leaving that to Honorable Maile, will you live with that?
Yes, I'm pleased with your chairperson.
Thank you, Chair. I will. I wonder, you know, the bills before, I could go and convey that to the National Forum, but we, the executive and Parliament, have spoken, and maybe the request should come from Parliament to the... I don't mind playing messenger to the National Forum, but I just as a matter of protocol, should we, as the executive, be asking the National Forum for that information, or should Parliament...
You are right, the matter is before us. Now, the request should come from us to them to say we have agreed in principle, but before we finalize the matter, we need the following. Honorable members would have seen that there are real challenges within the forum. And as Parliament, we should not declare a state of emergency. There are quite a number of things that they should sort out among themselves, and I think the period requested is reasonable. If you couple that with the additional requirement that they really give us a program of what they're going to do to enable us to monitor that, I think that it should be okay. But Honorable Majake, you have
I don't mind at all. I just didn't. I'm very aware and alert. I don't want to be seen to be interfering with Parliament. But we, by all means, we're happy to do that. If we get that,
doing it on the authority of this committee. So I don't think that there's a conflict there. That you are before us, and that's what we require. Yeah. So we are all in order. Mr. Bassett, we allowed you to consult with Mrs. Lowe, so allow others as well to consult. I guess you can proceed because they're doing it silently.
Thank you, Chair. If we can start on Clause 5, that's where we left off last time, and that coincides with the lifespan of the National Forum and the proposed extension. So I'll ask Mrs. Lowe just to take us through the issues that were raised at the public hearings and our responses to them, and then also to deal with this latest documentation from the National Forum.
Thank you, Chairperson and Honourable Members. Clause 5 of the Amendment Bill provides that Section 96(4) of the Principal Act will be amended to read that the National Forum ceases to exist on the date of the meeting with the Council as envisaged in Section 105 or such other date as the Minister may determine after consultation with the National Forum. Now, there has been further proposals regarding this clause, but I will first deal with the with the public comments on this. The National Bar Council supported this. Advocate Reinecke raises a question about the implementation, but the department's responses are as being discussed at the moment. Clear Law also had a problem with the fact that there's no date, but as the department will propose later, there will be a specific date inserted, so that is the response on that. The Gender Commission of Gender Equality supports this clause.
Yes, those were the proposals from the public chair. Then there was a letter this morning from the chairperson of the National Forum, which we just got a copy of. And in that, she proposes a further amendment to Section 96 to delete subsection 5. And just at the moment, the department thinks this would be a proper deletion because Section 96.5, in any event, seems to contradict Section 101 of the Principal Act. Section 101 provides that a member of the National Forum holds office for the duration of the National Forum, while Section 96.5 provides that the National Forum holds office for a three-year duration. So there seems to be a problem, as it is apparent that the lifespan of the National Forum will have to be extended. So firstly, we would ask for the consideration of the deletion of Section 96.5. And furthermore, we propose that Clause 5 be amended to insert the date of 31 October. In other words, that the clause as it is in the bill be amended a little bit so that it is still connected to the meeting referred to in Section 105, but there is a specific date in of 31 October, which coincides with the date proposed by the chairperson of the National Forum in the letter that we received this morning.
Are we happy with that? Honorable Maila, Honorable Mpumulan.
If I heard you correctly, you're saying that you need to amend the main act to remove the number of years. Okay, no, I sort of saying I beg your pardon. Sort of saying I beg your pardon, lady. I was saying that why specifically on the 31st? I mean, I'm trying to get that because we have not yet known the exact amount of time. It may be more. Why put in the act on the day, which is the 31st? Why specifically must we be tied to that particular time?
Chair, that's what, you know, this committee felt very strongly, that there should be a specific date and it shouldn't be left hanging. And the legislation should spell out up front, and everybody should know when the life of the National Forum is coming to an end, because there is an impatience which is understandable that this thing is dragging on and should already be nearing its completion. The mandate of the National Forum should be just about complete. And the way the bill as introduced into Parliament didn't have a specific date. And we got a very clear sense from this committee that they want a specific date. And that is why the committee asked the National Forum last week to evaluate the situation and evaluate the work that still needs to be done and see how much time is necessary for them to do that. And they are in a better position, I think, than anybody else to say they know what they need to do and they know how long it's going to take, more or less. And they have come up with the date of the 31st of October. They've still got to finalise, for instance, as they said last week, the question of assets and liabilities and staff of the statutory law societies. And they've still got...
Honourable Pumulan, that we have approved in principle extension to the 31st. So then the suggested amendment is to bring the act in line with that, because I think we have been generous enough. And as Mr. Bassett is saying, we really can't let this thing hanging. We need to send a clear message that that is the deadline. And all that is required now is for them to give us the activities prior to that date.
Correct. Shall I answer? Correct. But I thought that we were saying subject to what's been, what the plan is to be. And when we look at the plan, we may feel, I don't say we will, we may feel that the 31st is too soon. I'm just making, it may be earlier, it can be more than that. In other words, we've got that date. The question I have is, when we do that thing and put it in the act or in the amendment, it means if there is a need for a more extension, we are bound by that, or we have to make an amendment again of the act. That's my problem. That why must we... I don't want us to tie ourselves much when we don't know what the position is going to be. I'm worried, Honorable Chair, when I look at the amount of work and the complications that are there in that particular, that I wish them good luck. I really do. But anyway, if the people feel that, let us... find ourselves.
The law of interpretation requires legal certainty. And I think that what we require of them are not really substantive issues. Substantive issues is really a plan of action. Can't we live with that? Honorable Mpumlan is prepared to live with that. We accept that. Can we proceed?
Thank you, Chair. The next clause is clause 6. This clause amends section 97 of the Principal Act. If I could just quickly refer to that section. It is mainly section 1 that is firstly amended. And this section provides for the terms of reference of the National Forum. The Forum must, within 24 months, make certain recommendations to the Minister. If I could just alert the committee that this period of 24 months has been extended with 9 months already by the minister, as he is allowed to do in terms of the act. And the aspects on which recommendations must be made are listed there in subsection 1A. Now the first proposal in the bill is that that subsection 1A4 be deleted. That is the manner in which the provincial councils must be elected. There is a duplication in the act here. That is why this section is deleted. Then furthermore, subsection 1A5 is being replaced by the bill. It's only a technical, grammatical error that's being corrected there. Then, if I could give some background, the initial idea of the Act was that the National Forum only does initial work, an initial set of rules, an initial set of regulations. Now it transpired as they went along that when the first permanent council is established, that council will not be able to do its work immediately because there will be no regulations and no rules.
Those are the permanent rules and regulations referred to in the main body of the Act and that don't pertain to the National Forum's work. But the National Forum suggested that they should do this first set of regulations and rules so that the Council can immediately start its work. And obviously the Council can then amend, but that is just to get them off the ground. So these amendments proposed in Clause 6 is basically to provide that the Council can make the first set of rules and that they can recommend the first set of regulations to the Minister, and those are the rules and regulations pertaining to the Permanent Council. So that is what Clause 6C also refers to. It's a consequential amendment if this principle is acceptable to the committee.
But is that the business of this committee to accept the making of the rules by the forum, or is that something that we require from the minister? How the minister interact with the forum to make the rules, should that be our business? Or
it's only the regulations that will eventually come to this committee, because the regulations to be made by the minister must be approved by Parliament. The rules are internal issues, internal procedures and things. So rules are made by the legal profession at the moment, day in and day out, and they don't come to Parliament. They regulate internal procedures and processes, and they don't come to Parliament. And the Act suggests a continuation of that, that the rules will be made by the Council, and they don't have to come to, I don't think they have to come to Parliament for endorsement, if I understand your question correctly. May I just also add on to what Mrs. Lowe said? I think what happened when the bill was being prepared, and we've got to be quite frank about this, it was, when it was being promoted in Parliament, the idea was to give the National Forum, not to give them too many powers, but just to give them enough powers to set the Council up. And therefore their mandate was very limited. But as the National Forum has pointed out as they go along, and that is perhaps not enough, and it will be to the detriment of the public if, when the Council comes into operation, let's say on the 1st of January, and I'm using it as an example, 2018, rules and regulations regulating everything must be in place. Otherwise, the Council will need time to go and do that itself, and that could take 6 months. And in that 6 months, while the Council is busy setting itself up, you're not going to be able to do admissions, because there's no rules relating to admissions, there's no regulations relating to admissions. Your disciplinary conduct and hearings will come to an end, because there've got to be rules and regulations made for that. So as I recall saying when we came and did a briefing to the committee on this bill, was that there are two main things that the bill wants to achieve, and that's to broaden the mandate of the National Forum so that it can do these additional things to get the Council ready, and also to extend the lifespan of the National Forum so that it can finish up its job. So I just wanted to give that additional bit of background for the benefit of honourable members.
That sounds reasonable. Honourable members, are we happy with that? Okay, proceed there, Mrs. Long.
Thank you, Chair. Clause 6D provides for an amendment to subsection 2A of the Principles Act. Subsection 2A provides that the National Forum must, within 24 months of the commencement of this chapter, negotiate with and reach an agreement with the law societies referred to in Section 56 of the Attorney Act and any similar statutory body still regulating the legal profession in the former homelands, in respect of the transfer of the assets, rights, liabilities, obligations and staff to the Council or the Provincial Councils. Now, this proposed amendment is firstly to delete the reference to the former homelands bodies because they have been disbanded. And then furthermore, to provide for an insertion that says the following, as well as the date on which the Law Society shall be dissolved and such transfer if effected, provided that such date may not be later than 6 months after the date of commencement of Chapter 2. And Chapter 2 provides for the establishment of the Permanent Council. Now, the background to this is that there should be clarity on which body is doing what work, and that the Council and the Law Societies mustn't have the same functions at the same time. So this is quite technical, but it is necessary for a smooth transition so that there is clarity on which body is, for example, responsible at a specific time for things like the disciplinary mechanisms of the legal practitioners, etc. And there was comment on this clause. Clear Law proposed an amendment that looks different than that, and they wanted a date in of 1 February 2018, but as we've heard and the Honourable Member also pointed out, it's risky. The Department does not support this insertion or as proposed, because Law Societies exist as entities in their own right and their assets cannot simply be transferred to the new Council. There has to be an agreement. And failure to reach an agreement is catered for in the Act that provides that the parties may refer the matter to arbitration, but that will obviously also take time. Then Advocate Reinecke queried this question and said it is not well motivated, this proposed amendment, but the Department differs from her. We say that the Section 9271 of the Act provides that the National Forum must make recommendations, including several aspects. And she actually wanted to broaden the mandate of the... she does not want the National Forum to do this first set of rules, but the Department, as we just set out, do not agree with her, because it would be necessary for the advantage of the public that the Council is able to function when it comes into place. The Gender Commission expressed concern about the long delay in the promulgation of the Act, and they don't support the 24 months to dissolve the existing structures. But unfortunately, time has passed, and we are sitting with a situation that 24 months has, in actual fact, passed already. And the National Council of Bar Council of South Africa supports Clause 6.
Members, can we hear from yourself? I think we should be guided by the principle of reasonableness. We really don't have to put obstacles to them, otherwise in the next 2 years we'll be sitting with the same challenges. Honorable members, what would... anybody who's silence means consent. Proceed.
Thank you, Chair. Clause 7 amends Section 109 of the Principal Act, and this is only a technical consequential amendment to the principle that the committee just accepted, namely that the National Forum may recommend to the Minister the first set of regulations in terms of Section 94 of the Act, as well as they may make the first set of permanent rules. And so this is just to give effect to that principle that was accepted just now. Now, the comment received, the Gender Commission and the National Bar Council accepted this clause, and then Advocate Reinecke had a view that she did not elaborate on, that she was not happy with this clause, but it's difficult to respond as she did not give reasons for her view. That was the only comment.
Unless that's technical, the other objection is not motivated, so we are not able to take a different view, I guess. Can we let that proceed? We accept that. Proceed.
Thank you, Chair. Clause 8 amends Section 117 of the Principal Act, and it provides that the existing law societies must continue to perform their powers and functions until the date of transfer contemplated in Section 97(2)(a). Now, the background to this is that there was a huge concern that there will be a simultaneous functioning of the Permanent Council and the law societies, that there would be uncertainty who is doing what at what stage. And to alleviate this potential problem, this amendment to Section 117 is proposed, so that there is certainty as to who does what at what stage. And there was some comment on this. Advocate Reinecke stated that there's an impression that things should have been done that wasn't done, but she didn't elaborate on her view, so it's difficult to respond. The National Bar Council supports this clause, and yes, that was the only comment on clause IJ.
To the end of the comments that were made on the bill itself. Our response document then, we're on page, if I can, so we are on page 18 of the response document prepared by the department, and that this is general comments. I just want to take honourable members back to the other day when we started our responses, and I said that there were three categories of responses. The first is on the issues raised in respect to the bill. The second category is on issues that were raised that do not have a bearing on the bill, they go beyond the scope of the bill. And then the third is some additional proposals that were made by the National Forum particularly, which have a bearing on implementation and which could be considered favourably by this committee. So in our response document, Chair, we are now at the second category of proposals that go beyond the scope of the bill. Just like to get an indication from honourable members whether they would like to go through those proposals, although they are not related to the bill at all, but would be considered. And I want to remind the Chair that the Chair said on the previous occasion that there would inevitably be a bill at a later stage once the Council is in operation to deal with the whole range of issues that have been raised.
Thank you for that clarification, Honourable Pumlana.
Yes, I agree with them, but the problem I'm having when it comes, for example, to the proposal of amendment of Section 34(2)(b) of the main act, it seems to me if we wait part can be challenged, because what it's clearly discriminating when it says that those legal services rendered by advocates before the commencement of the act, as determined by the council in the rules. There are three types of advocates. There were advocates that were acting as an attorney in the sense that they were having, like the National Bar Council, where, I mean, you know, after the 1994 or something like that, the attorneys were super legal practitioners. They would take briefs from the public and at the same time go to the High Court. And therefore, the advocates were only limited, only if a good attorney would brief them. Now, I don't know what the meaning of this is, and whether this will not, if we leave it and not attend to it now, whether it will be in the interest of, whether it won't, how can I put it? What is the department suggesting? Is it suggesting this particular one must leave it? If so, how soon? Are they objecting to it being amended? Or is it a question of because it was not originally in the bill? And do they have a problem in amending it? And what will be the consequences if it... I just want a clarification on that point. Are you really worried that if is it really taking you out if we chip it in this particular round?
Chair, we personally don't think that there is a problem because the initial idea of Parliament was to have the different types of advocates, but it could be considered at a later stage, or if Parliament wants it to be in this bill, I must just alert them that the National Assembly approval will have to be obtained as it goes beyond the scope of this little amendment bill, because the scope of this amendment bill is to enable smooth transition from the old dispensation to the new one, and this obviously goes beyond that. It is a major principle difference, so that would be my response in this respect.
The question was, attend to things like this that were raised, how soon can you bring the bill that is going to attend to some things that may be as urgent as this one? Because I'm trying to avoid, I think when I look at this thing, I really feel that the whole bill can be challenged successfully in court, as being discriminatory. I just want to find out how soon can you bring a bill that is going to address this and perhaps others.
Let me leave it in your hands. Thank you, Chair. This particular proposal is quite a radical proposal, and it's in conflict with what Parliament decided 3 years ago, 4 years ago, when it enacted the Legal Practice Act. The intention was to make provision for a new type of advocate that could take briefs and money directly from the public, but then they'd have to have a Fidelity Fund certificate to protect the public. And when this was negotiated and discussed at length, it was decided that this type of advocate should only be able to do work that advocates traditionally do, court work, pleadings and that sort of thing. For instance, and not to have those advocates doing conveyancing or doing notary work or doing administration of estates. And that was a very specific and intentional
decision by Parliament, not by the Department, by Parliament. And to depart from that, I think, in fairness to the legal profession, we'd have to consult widely with them and the general public. So it's going to need going back to the drawing board and opening up that whole debate. And we're not saying we don't want to open up that whole debate, but I think it really needs to be discussed and consulted on before making decisions of that nature. And this is that's probably why you have a rule in the Rules of Parliament to say that if a bill goes beyond the scope of, you want to extend the scope of the bill, then you've got to get the consent of the National Assembly, precisely because it hasn't been consulted on properly, and you need that before new issues can be approved by Parliament.
Mr. Molefe, you are welcome. I think your point, Honorable Mpumlwana, is valid, but as we agreed, this is really to facilitate the transition, and that matter will have to be dealt with when the new bill comes, and I think the department agrees that we have to confront that situation. Can we leave it there, consistent with our view that now all we want to do is just to facilitate the transition and not to extend the scope, because that will force us to go to the National Assembly and then defeat the purpose of the request to extend the scope. Honorable Mpumulo.
No, I just... maybe it's going to be difficult for them to give me how soon. That was my question. How soon do you think a bill to address this and particular other things? Because as I said, that you... I'm not happy with the reply of... unfortunately, because what it means is when you say traditionally, and this is exactly the reason, because the tradition has been broken. The attorneys now are advocates as well as attorneys. But advocates, even if they have a fidelity certificate, they are now, according to this, would be barred from doing the work of the attorneys. And yet the attorneys are now freely doing the work of the advocates. So I say, to me, it looks this is very, very important, and I think that this is why I'm asking just the date. When, how soon can we bring a bill that addresses this so that we can clarify, you know, open the can of worms, if you like, but how soon are you going to likely to open the can? Well, that's all I'm asking. I'm not fighting with what you're saying that let's take this bill through, but I'm worried that when this thing has been raised, and if we just leave it like that, this will definitely be challenged. Definitely will be challenged because it's unfair. It's unfair. The traditional thing was, as I said earlier on, without repeating myself, traditional thing has been that attorneys stick to being attorneys. Now, today, attorneys are also advocates. Now, and yet advocates cannot be attorneys. And this thing is emphasizing that, and I say that it certainly is unfair and is discriminating, and the reason, and so if this bill is not trying to unite, to have one, or as much as possible, one legal practitioner, same, you know. I don't know what you mean by tradition. See, when it says, you're going to interpret this thing traditionally before this act, what does that mean? It means that, does it mean before the attorneys became advocates? Or is it before, after they have been made advocates as well? So the interpretation of it, this is why I'm saying, when are you likely how soon can that be to address this and other things that we feel that maybe need some attempt.
Do you want to step into the shoes of the department?
I was just going to point out that, well, just say that when we were deliberating on the act before, you know, the bill before it became an act, we actually, there was like a lot of discussion around the way the legal profession is developing and the forms of different forms of legal practice. And at that stage, we didn't want to regulate that because we didn't know enough. So really what we've done is provided in the act in section 34.9 that the council within 2 years of being established must investigate and make recommendations on different forms of legal practice. So I don't know if that helps you a little bit, but it just says that it's, and I hear what you're saying, but my second thought was around what work would an advocate, if an advocate has a Fidelity Fund certificate, that person can take work directly from the public. But in any event, an attorney couldn't take conveyancing job on unless they had qualified as a conveyancer and simply for a notary. So I'm just wondering what work would an advocate be excluded from doing? I don't know, maybe the department can help us.
I thought that raises the whole issue of fusion, and we don't want to go there at this stage. Wouldn't it be reasonable to say or to expect that once we've agreed on the transitional issues, the department will also go back to start working on the final arrangements, but to try and pin them down to a date now, maybe expecting too much, because they will also have to touch base with their principals. Can we live with that? But it's a critical matter that we have raised, and I think if we allow them to note it and pursue it.
No, I think I can live with that. As I say that the problem immediately, we just close the book, people start to relax. But because this has been raised while we're talking about this, and we say that these issues, which are not part of the bill, the present bill, can we put them aside and deal with that? And then I think there was a promise at some stage that, in fact, we will come back to them. This is why I was saying how soon. Now, if we say that won't know at some stage, I mean, it may be 2020 before we can come back to that. That's why I wanted, as soon as possible, that we quickly raise a bill that is looking into it. Open the can of worms. Let it be.
Trust you keep to tradition of acting within a reasonable time, and then early next year we should see something before us. Honorable Masondo, you are most welcome. It's good to see you honoring us with your presence.
Thank you, Chair. I will then move to page 25 of the document that we distributed to the committee. That is after the table format, which contains specific responses. These are amendments that was after the bill was introduced. They were proposed by the Law Societies of South Africa and by the National Forum. And a few of these the department supports in the sense that we think it will be necessary for smooth transition, and some of those we do not support as being in the sense of the smooth transition goal. And furthermore, those that we do propose, we suggest that it
might not be necessary to obtain National Assembly's permission, as it is consequential to the goal of smooth transition. So the first proposal relates to Section 4 of the Principal Act. Section 4 provides that the South African Legal Practice Council is established as a body corporate, etc., and exercises jurisdiction of all over all legal practitioners and candidate legal practitioners. That is the permanent council then in Chapter 2. Now, there is a concern that there will be...
I'm on page 25. I don't see what you...
It might be different depending on where it was printed. It might come out.
It's page 26, not 25.
Under the heading, Amendments to Bill proposed by the Law Society of South Africa and the National Forum.
It's admirable, Honorable Mbunwan. Thank you very much for being so attentive that you don't allow anything to go fall through the cracks. Thank you. Proceed, Honorable Ms.
Thank you, Chair. It is proposed that at the end of Section 4, the following wording be inserted when Section 124 of the Act comes into operation. In other words, that the Council only takes jurisdiction at that date. Section 120 contains the short title of the Act and the commencement thereof. Section 122 provides for the commencement of Chapter 10, and that date was 1 February 2015. Section 123 provides that Chapter 2 of the Act dealing with the Council comes into operation 3 years after the date of commencement of Chapter 10. And Section 124 provides that the remaining provision come into operation on a date of the commencement of Chapter 2 fixed by the President. Now, this proposed amendment is necessary to avoid conflicting jurisdiction between the new Council and the existing four law societies when Chapter 2 comes into operation in terms of Section 123. And this is a smooth transition provision. The existing law societies will continue to regulate the attorneys until Section 124 comes into operation. And in the overlapping period, the new council can become established and get the infrastructure in place, the staff and the assets, and the provincial councils must be elected and the functions must be delegated. All those things have to be done, and a lot has been done, but there will still have to be a little overlapping. And when the council is then operational ready, the existing law societies will continue to regulate the attorneys until 124 comes into operation, and 124 repeals the Attorneys Act and the Admission of Advocates Act.
Are we happy with that? We members are happy. Proceed, Mrs. Lowe.
Thank you, Chair. Then there were two proposals regarding Section 25.3 and Section 33, but they do not directly relate to transition. So I don't know if Chair wants me to even discuss it, as the Department does not support it at all. It will require approval by the National Assembly.
Outside our mandate for now. So, honourable members, I think we respect that mandate. Proceed.
Thank you, Chair. Then there's a proposed amendment to Section 62 of the Act, and that amendment is supported as it relates to the smooth transition of the Attorney's Fidelity Fund towards the new board of the new Legal Practitioners Fidelity Fund. And The amendment is necessary to ensure that there is clarity on what, how the board will function and when the board will start to function. Immediately before Chapter 2 of the Act comes into operation, there will be a board, we can call it the outgoing board, and then the new board must be constituted after the commencement of Chapter 2. But this might take a few days or weeks, and then there might be a time where the outgoing board cannot exercise control, but there is no new board. And so the current wording of the Act will result in a situation where the fund cannot be managed and will not be able to function. And this will be very detrimental to the public and the legal practitioners and other stakeholders. So there is a proposal that there's a new section 62.3 inserted that reads the members of the Board of Control of the Attorney's Fidelity Fund who hold office as members of that board at the date of commencement of Chapter 2 shall remain in office in that capacity as members of the board for a period of 6 months after the date or until the members referred to in subsection 1 have been elected, whichever occurs later. And subsection 1 is the new board.
This is the amendment that was requested by the Fidelity Fund. Mr. Molefe was here during public hearings and made the plea to this committee that we do this important transitional provision is required to ensure a smooth transition. I don't know whether honourable members would like to hear from the board.
If in case you have changed your mind, can you address us?
No, Chair, thank you very much. Certainly not. We haven't changed our mind. Our biggest problem is to avoid a gap or a lacuna, as it is called, during the transitional period. There are a number of activities that have to be a discussion between the board and the Legal Practice Council once it is constituted, one of which is the election of the board members of the Legal Practitioners Fidelity Fund, the determination of the regulations or rules that are going to address that. If we do not have a board, then there is no discussion whatsoever that's going to happen. We'll have the LPC imposing the regulations. So essentially, there won't be any discussion. And there's also discussions that must take place around the determination of what is payable, for instance, for the issuing of a Fidelity Fund certificate. I think it was in 2012 when I addressed this committee and I pointed out that I was admitted as an attorney on the 4th of August, 1987, and then appointed as CEO of the fund on the 1st of November, 2010. And what astounded me the most was that what I paid, for instance, for a Fidelity Fund certificate in 1987 was when I was admitted, was 50 rands. And in 2010, it was still 50 rands. And that did not make sense to me. Those are the issues that we need to negotiate. But what I would essentially make as a point, Chair, is that even yesterday, meeting with my management team, we started plotting our timetable or deadlines in terms of when we would want to see the elections happening. The forum has indicated to us, because we're assisting in setting up the database, that they're looking at a date around February next year for the election of the members of the board, of the practice council and its subcommittees. We believe we can then, within a period of 2 months, actually get to a point where we can also elect, have elections for members of the board. So what would practically happen is if we get that right, the new board will actually take over even before the 6 months that is proposed. Whichever happens earlier will give us the time to be able to run with these things.
Thank you for reminding us what you Thank have you. Said in good standing. Mr. Molefe and Mr. Bassett are at one, so can we proceed?
Thank you, Chair. Next is a proposed amendment in
Section 114 of the Principal Act and new subsection 5. This amendment is necessary also for the transitional period and smooth transition, and this is to confirm the existing rights of appearance of attorneys in the High Court, Superior Court of Appeal and Constitutional Court. And that is because of the act that the Honourable Member earlier referred to that gives attorneys also the right of appearance in the High Court in certain circumstances. And the current Section 114 of the Act does not provide for that. So there might be a risk that existing rights will be affected. And it will definitely be very detrimental to a client when it might be in the middle of a court case and this comes into operation and that attorney doesn't have the right of appearance. So the proposal is that this subsection 114.5 be inserted to provide that every attorney who on the date referred to in Section 124 of the Act has the right of appearance in the High Court, Supreme Court of Appeal or the Constitutional Court in terms of any law retains that right after the commencement of this Act.
Makes me laugh. Correct. Much as Section 34.2 exactly the same thing. What is happening is that today you've got advocates who are taking briefs from the public and you've got attorneys who are going to the High Court. Now you are saying that relating to attorneys is urgent. It must come in here. But by relating to advocates, it is not. You must bring it later. This is where I've got a problem. Now I'm saying that this is correct. I agree with it. But I'm saying that what is good for the goose is good for the gander. Because it's taking out the rights. That clause, that Section 34 takes out the existing rights of advocates who are taking briefs from the public. This is what I was saying. Now, if we're saying this is part, it is transitional. That one is also transitional because it takes away the rights. This one takes away the rights of attorneys who are now appearing in the High Court. That one is taking away the rights of advocates who are taking briefs from the public.
Nick, do you want to address us?
Thank you, Chair. I understand the Honourable Member's concern. Currently, advocates under the current Admission of Advocates Act is not able to take direct briefs from the public. It will only be after this Principal Act, the Legal Practice Act, is in operation fully, that they will be allowed. So currently they don't have a right that is being affected, but currently attorneys in certain circumstances are allowed to appear in the High Courts. And the fear is that there seems to be a lacuna in the Act, in the transitional provisions, that there is no specific provision made for those who do have that existing right before this Act comes into operation. And they might be in the middle of the court case and suddenly they're not allowed to appear anymore. So the advocate's rights to obtain direct briefs to get will only be available to them after this Act comes into operation and after those advocates who elect that career path have obtained Fidelity Fund certificates. So currently they cannot. It's not yet an existing right.
Using these Latin things so that members of the public must know what we are talking about. Lacuna, you and I would know what it's all about, but the public would not know what we are talking about.
I apologize, Chair. The word lacuna means there's a gap.
With due respect, I'm not convinced. I think since the De Freitas case, if you remember, much earlier, advocates in the National Bar. The National Bar used to be called an independent bar or something like that. National Bar Council of South Africa do take briefs from the public. Now, if you say they don't have that right, I don't understand. I'm saying is that the whole British system, which we have inherited, allowed solicitors who are now attorneys only to talk, not to go to court, in any court actually, to go to, and they would have to brief an advocate. Now in South Africa, the attorneys then were allowed to go to the lower courts, but not to the higher courts. Now after 1994, then the attorneys were given this right that you're talking about, that they could go to the High Court. Then the advocate said, wait a minute, I can't wait for somebody to brief me when he himself can go to the High Court. Why should I be briefed? Then they sit down, and so they are starving. They said, wait a minute, why can't we go then? Why must we wait for the guy who is going to brief you when, in fact, he can go and finish this case? Then they went there. They take briefs. Then the question was of the question of fidelity certificate, which was recognized by, for example, this particular bar. Now, that is a practical right of them to do so. And it is caused by exactly the same thing, that attorneys go to the High Court, but advocates cannot go to people. And that is definitely unconstitutional. It is discrimination. And therefore, if this clause is urgent to keep that right, the same goes with 34.2. That's what I'm arguing. If you have got a problem with that, I just want to find out how to make a distinction between the two. Thank you.
That not be the gap that is being referred to, that has to be addressed, but I don't want to speak for the department. We are saying that there are gaps, and this transition is meant to enable them to close the gaps.
What I'm saying, Honorable Chair, I'm saying that I agree with this one. I say the same thing, provision here is exactly the same that this 34.2 we're talking about here. What I'm saying is that let's pass this one, let's also regard 34.2 as a transitional thing, because it's now taking the rights of the people. It means that, first of all, it is very vague. It says the provisions before this act. What were the provisions before this act? There were two types. Are you talking about the old one, that attorneys could not go to the High Court? Are you talking about when the attorneys could go to the High Court and what are you talking about? In other words, are you removing with this clause the rights that the advocates from the bar, for example, I'm just making an example of others, had before this act? And so then I say that these are the similar things. In fact, it's copycat. This other one is this section. Section 124 and Section 34.2b are similar.
Good argument to attempt us to go beyond our mandate.
See, I don't know. I can't really take it further than what Mrs. Lowe said. Section 114 in that Chapter 10 deals with transitional provisions, and it deals with vested rights. And yeah, we're trying to protect a vested right that attorneys had, certain attorneys had. They had the right of appearance in the High Court if they complied with certain criteria. Advocates don't have that right, and what this Act does, the Legal Practice Act, gives advocates who want a Fidelity Fund certificate to continue practicing, but taking money directly from the
the public with the backing of a Fidelity Fund certificate, but doing the same work that they've always done, the right to do the work that they've always done. So I don't know how to... I see these Section 34 and Section 114 in two different lights. Section 114 is protecting a vested right that attorneys have at present, but Section 34 is not giving advocates a new right. I don't know how to take it, whether I could explain it.
We'll be happy that we accept good insights to be arming us for the time when we deal with the bill that will be hopefully put before us in the new year.
No. No, I actually am taken aback, Honorable Chair. I wish we could have looked into things much earlier and discussed it. To me, this is the same thing. The argument I think you are talking about, if you're saying that you are removing the right of attorneys, of advocates, to take briefs, even with Fidelity certificate, and you are saying, I'm removing that, but I am now giving attorneys, confirming that attorneys can go to the High Court. Now, what we actually say, you are reversing what has been to courts in various cases, including I forget the name of this judge now, who is now a judge, but De Freitas and other cases. Now, if you are saying that it cannot, this is why I'm saying these are same things. I am not happy with looking at one side as being a transitional thing, keeping the attorneys. In other words, you are reversing the rights that the advocate had before. And I'm prepared that we stand down the matter because it's very, very important. I think I'm prepared to stand down the matter. Perhaps we can check it to tomorrow so that we make sure that we don't take this thing. I'm prepared that we stand down the matter because now, if you don't mind.
We stand down the matter and then see if you can take the matter any further tomorrow. But bearing in mind that you have already acknowledged that there are some gaps that we have to deal with in this transitional period. Proceed.
Thank you, Chair. Then the last one is a proposal by the Department that Section 123 be amended to provide as follows. Chapter 2 comes into operation on any date fixed by the President. Currently, the Act says that Chapter 2 comes into operation 3 years after the date of commencement of Chapter 10, and that would be 1 February 2018. But as we have heard the past few weeks, the date of 1 February is not attainable anymore. The National Forum got a 9-month extension for their tasks, and they are asking another extension for the minister. So this is why this proposal is made. It is absolutely impossible to meet the 3-year deadline. So this provision should come off the statute books. And it is mainly because of reasons beyond the control of basically anybody. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable members, there is a proposal, and we're happy with that. Agreed. Proceed.
That brings us to the end of the response document. So we've got a fair idea of some of the proposals that were made by this committee, and as recently as today, about the 31st of October next year, at the request of the National Forum. So we need to go and prepare those amendments. If I understand that we are meeting tomorrow on the bill. So we need to go and prepare the amendments for formal consideration so that we can table it for the committee's consideration, including, just to remind honourable members, that one of the amendments that was discussed, I think, last week was the provincial councils, the boundaries thereof.
Chairperson, without taking you back, I just want to mention this, and then you don't even have to respond to it. Just to say that we need to re-emphasize the idea that we need to work on that, practicing and non-practicing attorneys, and also managing to bring them under one roof for control of the profession. I'm sure they have hit me because I can see Mr. Bassett is everybody in the room. I'm sure if somebody didn't hear a chairperson, they can indicate so. Oh, because I was not here, I don't want to actually take anybody back if you have actually discussed it, but because I take it as something that is very important to look at the whole issue of practicing and non-practicing lawyers as discussed. And then there was concern that it's very difficult to really put lawyers in one under one roof like it's happening in other countries. And we said, just go look at it. Because then it actually makes it difficult for whoever is leading to control this fraternity. And it goes into issues of payment, also fidelity fines, and how clients will be protected at all times.
Mr. Bassett, can you add that to the matters that we are packing? So tomorrow, give us a package before we put the matter to a vote. Okay. Thank you very much for the job well done. I think we have no option but to release. Thank you very much. So we'll see you tomorrow. We will now deal with the report on the oversight received by the Portfolio Committee on Justice and Correctional Services, which was distributed before, which we take as having been read. And as soon as the department peacefully leaves the room, then and also the Fidelity Fund, Mr. Molefe, Mr. Maile, then we can deal with our business. Mrs. Lowe, Mr. Bassett, thank you very much. You are well excused. In the light of the fact that we have all read the report, we will attend to it page by page. If there are any corrections or any matter arising. Honorable Horn, from our side, ACDP. And then Honorable Horn.
Yes, thank you, Chair. On page one there, I just want to raise the question there at 211. Under East London Correctional Centre, it stated possibly correctly so, that gangsterism has been identified as a major challenge at the East London Correctional Centre. But then the very next sentence, I think, captured the essence of our visit, and that was to the female facility where gangsterism is not an issue. So I'm just questioning whether if the purpose of our visit was not to appraise ourselves of the issue of gangsterism, whether it's relevant to at all state it in the background.
What is your view? Accept the question.
Now, my view is that the background should rather state why we decided to visit specific centres. And I think the idea was to get an overall balance in our oversight visit, and therefore we decided to visit the female centre in East London, along with a meeting of the regional management.
Any view to that? If there's no contrary view, will we effect the necessary amendment? Any other observation? Thank you for the correction. Any issue arising there? None. Page 4. Corrections, issue arising.
It's just a technical thing there. Near the bottom of page 5, I believe Sedibeng is not spelled that way, but S-E-D-I.
You are leading by example that indigenous languages must enjoy equal respect. Thank you, Mr. Horn. Honorable Horn. Honorable Breitenbach.
Thank you. In 3.2.9 on page 5, the maximum center has had a number of violent security incidents, not has got a number.
Written back. Any other, Honorable Mutapu?
Thank you, Chairperson. I propose that there should be consistency in writing Hoshi Mamburu, not an H is left there, it's Hoshi Mamburu, like he did in 2.4, page 2. Thank you.
K-G-O-S-H-I,
as he did in page 2, who knows? He did it eloquently well, 2.4.
That's part of the respect to the indigenous languages that is required of us. Thank you very much.
There's the same problem on page 3.4.
Breitenbach. The necessary correction has been effected. Any other correction? None. Page 9. Nothing. Page 10. Honorable Hall.
Yes, Chair, there at 426, the very first line, it states that the committee notes complaints by inmates who are locked up far from their families. I think we've learned now that lock-up in DCS terminology is something very different from being incarcerated. So I think technically it would be better to say by inmates who are incarcerated far from family, from their families.
What is the difference between locked up and incarcerated?
Yes, Chair. If you joined at St. Albans, you would have known. no, lock-up is, as a matter of fact, a sort of a emergency measure DCS employs to enhance security or prevent riots.
Mm-hmm.
So that means it is a system they employ whereby, apart from visit when they're going to eat, inmates are locked up in the cells in a semi-permanent state. So that's what DCS mean when they talk about lock-up.
Okay, thank you very much. I think the inmates are hearing the clarification, so they don't come back to us and say we're locking them up. Any other matter on page 10? Page 11. No, Honorable Majaki. Followed by Honorable Britton.
I'm taking page 11, 12, and 13 at the same time because they're related. All I've got to do is an advance. And say that I'm proposing an additional recommendation to say that we make this our flagship project. Maybe meet with the department so that we can get a full report on their interactions and albums. Because remember last December there was a problem with the albums. And our observation was such that we could see that indeed there is a problem, and therefore, like we did at some stage, gave the SCA full attention when it was actually having a lot of problems in terms of maintenance of the buildings that they're calling. Let's make this our flagship so that we give close monitoring to the numbers.
A flagship? That's not by everybody. Can you just elaborate what you mean by
that? By flagship. If a project is a flagship project, it means program. It means it's a program that will require more support and maybe, if it's possible, more resources because we realize that there is various types of interventions that need to be made. But where it will begin, you just have to add under 4.3.16, you can add that the committee intends making this a flagship program. And then it will then be followed by our engagement with the department on the NALPAC.
A proposal, Honorable Horn.
I don't disagree with the sentiment, Chair. I think, I believe the Honourable Breitenbach will get to it, and she's next in line. I just want to suggest that then, in terms of our observations, we will have to, I think, be a bit more clear that, as a matter of fact, that the situation in St. Albans, for a variety of reasons, is really unacceptable. Yeah, I have certain observations, but the Honourable Breitenbach was before me in line.
Thank you. I agree with the proposal of the Honourable Pilani Majaki that we should pay attention to this particular facility. And I don't believe that our report sufficiently captures the situation that we found at St. Albans. I think we should note in our report And I propose that we make the amendments where necessary to reflect that the conditions at St. Albans maximum security in fact constitute gross human rights abuses. The conditions are completely unacceptable. In 4.3.9 on page 12, for instance, we say the committee notes that the centre is in dire need for renovations. I submit that renovations will not do the trick, that the maximum security centre at St. Albans needs to be demolished and rebuilt. No amount of renovations will turn that place into anything remotely close to fit for human habitation. And this committee cannot turn away from that fact. Those are human beings being kept there in conditions that are beyond description and appalling. And I think the committee should somewhere in our report also note that that we make a recommendation that the Office of the Inspecting Judge pay a visit there and in fact become involved in that project. And if we're going to make it a project, great, then we can do it together. But the conditions at St. Albans cause me sleepless nights. It is beyond disgusting. In 4.3.13, for instance, we note complaints on delays in serving meals. Well, that isn't what the inmates told us. They told us that they're locked up, in the sense that the Honourable Horn has just explained, for 24 hours a day. And they're allowed out for their meals. And because the officials are afraid of the inmates, they allow them out in groups to eat, and they get served all three meals in one go. They get breakfast, lunch, and supper, and they must eat it. And then they go back to their cells. That's unacceptable. We cannot treat people like that. So, and we need to note that, because those are the conditions that we found. It's not been making it better than it was. It was shocking. The other problem at St. Albans that fuels the violence is, of course, the fact two separate gangs are kept in one quadrant facing off against each other, with the hapless individuals who don't want to belong to a gang stuck in the middle, literally. That needs to be addressed, and if the inspecting judge isn't going to address it, then this committee needs to address it. But the conditions at St. Albans cannot continue, and I don't feel that our report accurately reflects the horror that we found there. Thank you.
Followed by Honourable Horn, was followed by Honourable Musapo, and I hope as we discuss, we'll bear in mind the security of both the inmates and the officials.
Yes, I think it's a pathetic situation. But I think I would have. Yeah, it is on. I must come closer to it, I suppose. I think I agree with Honourable Bredenbach on the sentiments that the people are really in a pathetic situation. That's a fact. But I think that is caused mainly by the overcrowding. Because I think we need first and foremost to remove prisoners. I mean, so manageable number at the moment. I understand that not only in St. Albans, in most facilities, they were not meant to be correctional services. They were meant to be prisons, just to lock people out. And therefore now, the buildings generally right through South Africa are not really meant for correcting for the policies of the present government. They are meant for just put people there, lock them in, throw away the keys. So the question of buildings, I agree, they need to be changed. There needs to be some kind of alteration or whatever else. Honorable Premier says, just cut it off. I mean, it can't be done. so to alleviate the overcrowding. And the other thing which I think we need to tackle is the question of guest tariff. Now, that one, there is a problem, not only with due respect, not only the inmates, there are members of the correctional services who are take part in gangsters, particularly at St. Albans. There is that relationship which makes it difficult for other warders to some who are innocent find it difficult to stay at St. Albans. So I think we need to reflect the question of overcrowding and say, with immediate effect, that has to be attended to. Because I think if there are fewer inmates, more manageable. That can we can do it with immediate effect. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. Let me first maybe also not trying to be difficult, but just to assist, remind the members of the committee who were on the tour that we specifically asked the question as to whether St. Albans Maximum Security Division was overcrowded, and it was in fact confirmed that it was not. So maybe the Honourable Bulwana missed that part, but the reality is that I think while one gets the sense of overcrowding, and that's coming back to the point the Honourable Breitenbach made, is that what was also confirmed is that where the Maximum Security Division is now housed was actually built as a medium security facility. So the Maximum Security Facility got into a state of total dilapidation. And then as a result, the maximum security was moved to what was built as a medium security facility. And the problem is definitely compounded by the fact that whilst I think the plans for a maximum security facility will obviously enable more of a lock-up situation when the need arises, the fact is that a medium security facility is developed not with a plan in mind that there should be a semi-permanent state of lock-up as we found at St. Albans Maximum Security. So in that sense, definitely, apart from the state of disrepair, the reality is that the facility does not lend itself really to a maximum security situation. But then, in addition to that, Chair, the Honourable Bulwana is quite correct in saying that the gangsterism is at the core of the issue there. And I think we as a committee must observe that what DCS is doing there, and I will get to the issue of the staff just now, but what DCS is in fact doing at St. Albans Maximum Security is that they are managing gangsterism rather than tackling it. And I think from an oversight perspective, that must be noted and that must be questioned. It is unacceptable to say that we can't fight gangsterism, we will not defeat it, and therefore we're going to manage it. So the Honourable Breitenbach is quite correct in saying that the 26th and the 28th are in adjacent, or there's maybe a grouping in between them, in that facility, which is in a square. But then simultaneously, in addition to just managing gangsterism, what DCS is doing there is they are also perpetuating the class system that one is ordinarily to find at a correctional facility. So the so-called youths are grouped together. The so-called religious people are grouped together. And that in itself perpetuates the frailties of certain groupings. And that, as a matter of fact, I think also adds to a situation where they, for all practical purpose, cannot allow all the inmates of that maximum security facility to be unlocked at the same time. And that must be of a grave concern to us. But then also, Jay, coming to the issue of staff, and you're quite correct, obviously our task is not only to look at the human rights abuses that are there, as the Honourable Breitenbach has observed. The reality is also that even though I'm obviously no psychologist or remotely qualified to make an evaluation of that, the one thing that also I think hit us right between the eyes in respect of the staff is that they look like a deer caught in a spotlight. I don't think it's an over-exaggeration to say that quite possibly the staff there all suffer from some sort of post-traumatic syndrome. And the fact that DCS and the area management and DCS nationally has not been able to identify that and manage that by assisting the staff must also be questioned. It would seem that one cannot but observe that St. Albans Maximum seems to be a ticking time bomb just waiting for another explosion. I can't put it in any other words. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, one cannot deny that the situation at St. Albans needs much to be desired. There are a lot of human rights abuses, but fortunately the Secretariat has captured most of the issues here which were raised at St. Albans. The issue of non-working of ablution facilities and showers, and then no counseling after the 26th December 2016 abuses and so forth. And Chairperson, if you look at 4.3.3, the Minister and Deputy Minister undertook to attend to the violent situation at St. Albans. And we as the committee, we requested that we be briefed, the next quarter, we be briefed on the development by the DCS. I think, Chairperson, to say that most of the issues here were not captured, especially the issue of saying the whole management area need to be built from scratch. We need to take the fiscal situation of our country into consideration. And what needs to be done as captured in 4.3, 4.9? I think I fully support it where it reads as follows. The committee knows that the center is in dire need for renovations as toilets, painting, in terms of painting, non-working of toilets and showers, and again, issue of lights. But what I'm saying is that the Secretariat tried to capture most of the issues which were raised by inmates. And of paramount importance, Chairperson, was the issue of lack of trust between the inmates and the officials. But and again, that issue of the issue of delays in hiring of additional staff by the department is also causing some of these issues, which is beyond the officials or management control. But what I'm trying to say, Chairperson, is that generally most of the issues in terms of human rights abuses, the Secretariat tried to cover. Thank you.
Thanks, Chairperson. I just thank the members because they deliberated on what we all agree is a crisis. That needs the intervention of the department and maybe our engagement in the department. And there's been a suggestion that maybe the Inspector General also needs to be brought into play. I think we just need to do the additional recommendation that we want to make it a flagship, and then other processes to then follow.
Can we say that we shouldn't expect the committee to write a full essay, but I think the message is clear that they are in human conditions which require intervention. Before I proceed, Honorable Masondo, do you want to say something?
Not just two points, Jefferson. Just 2 points, please. The first issue is really about the question as to whether inmates in all these correctional centers do engage in work. I mean, I've read part of the report, but I'm not familiar with what is happening currently. Do they do work? And if they don't do work, I mean, how do people just sit? Isn't this part of what is creating problems? So the question is about work. Do they do any work? And if so, what kind of work do they do? And lastly, the question of disappearance of money meant for individual inmates, as reflected on 4.3.7. What is that is being done to address that?
Two critical questions. Is it an omission that these matters are not addressed, Honorable?
Thanks, Chairperson. Honorable Mason, the situation there is that the officials feel safe when the inmates are locked in. And this is why also even giving them meals becomes a problem. Because they are fear of the attacks that they are actually experiencing from the inmates. And this is why now you're actually asking there's no activity, because how they actually handle the situation is to see to it that they get locked up all the time for their own safety, which is not what's supposed to be happening, which is what will require the intervention from the department and us together as we look at the situation and deciding on what strategies I'm going to actually employ to manage to actually have to deal with this situation that's untenable as an album.
Are you answered? The second leg of the question was not addressed.
Hey, by the way, what's the second leg?
Missing money. 4.3.7.
The missing money.
Yeah.
Yes, it will be part of the matters we will be addressing in the department.
So I guess we are not solving inhumanity by creating another inhumanity.
On the question of work, I'm sorry if I'm going back to this matter, and maybe I've addressed it before, but what is the practice in relation to ensuring that inmates work?
Yes. Honorable Mason, let's see, one man's meat is another man's poison. In the olden days, people used to, there used to be a sentence that you're going to be too many years hard labor or something like that. And inmates accepted that. Now this democracy has actually made people have rights. Even prisoners have rights to watch TV in prison instead of going out to work. Those who want to go and work and so on. That needs some policy
considerations. My argument would be that to correct people, you must make them go and work and train them to do some kind of work. As I say, at the moment, inmates, if they don't want to go and work, they just sit down, don't go and work. We need to change that as a policy matter. Thank you.
Before you speak, there's evidence that there's production in the workshops and the vegetables and so on. So some kind of work seems to be happening. Honorable President, but whether or not that is sufficient, maybe that's the question we must deal with. Honorable President.
Perhaps just to point out to the Honorable Masanga that only prisoners in the medium section of the prisons do work. People in maximum security sections don't do work. So we talk at the moment we're discussing St. Albans and the maximum security, so that those prisoners can't work. People kept in medium portions of the prison do work, medium security.
Gross violations of human rights which cannot be addressed piecemeal, doesn't it speak to the recommendation that we get the inspecting judge to go there, deal with the matter, make a comprehensive report, and that we, as I suggested, make that place a flagship follow-up and make sure that that situation is turned around. Honorable Brettendorf.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would agree with that recommendation, but I would like to be put more strongly. I would like the Office of the Inspecting Judge to go to St. Albans as a matter of extreme urgency and get involved there. Just to put it on his to-do list won't do.
Much as I don't oppose what I think I agree with Honorable Brettendorf on that, but in addition, we need to make some recommendations of urgency. For example, each day here is a nightmare in that prison. Each day. So we think, as I say, this question of overcrowding has to be attended to with immediate effect. Because then it allows people, fewer inmates in there who probably are manageable. And that may release this question of having meals properly, because there are few. With immediate effect that we just take them out as many as possible. While we're making the renovations, while we're doing all those things. But the urgent thing, we... This is sabotage.
Honorable members, I think we need to bear in mind that the majority of people in these centers are young people. And when we say we want to create a better South Africa, we mean bettering, reforming those young people. So this also means that our integrated system should work because we can't live with a situation like that for so long when we have been in government for 20 years and not be aware of that situation. So maybe we need to get a report of on this integrated justice system. Are these component departments talking to each other, and why are they not aware of these things? Because that's not acceptable. We are dealing with human beings. We have consciously said that these are not prisons, they are corrections, and we have to ensure that these are not just corrections, correctional services in name, but indeed. Can we leave the matters then? Thank you very much for your contributions. So we will effect the corrections and call on the inspecting judge to treat this matter as a matter of extreme urgency and ourselves keep an eye on the situation. Honorable Hon.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. 4315 just also doesn't read as it should, but the Secretariat obviously could improve that. I don't know what was intended. There at 451, I would just plea that we maybe elaborate a bit on the issue of the more artisans. What we, as a matter of fact, established is that due to the fact that there's not a full complement of artisans, the workshop is only operating on 50% of its capacity. And if we say, and we always hear that ultimately, as you point out, rehabilitation and social reintegration must be at the core of the department's efforts, then I think what boggles the mind is that we found that large workshop, but it's only at 50% of what it can be due to the fact that there is not enough artisans. And we, through that, as a matter of fact, social rehabilitation and ultimately social reintegration is hampered in a big way. Thank you.
Okay. The correction page 13, 4.4.1. The committee notes and comments the median B for a low vacancy rate of 2%. Full stop. Then the rate, vacancy rate that follows.
I think it would be important that in the light of our findings, we identify some minimum standards and benchmark with the best of the correctional centers. Like, I was very impressed with the Khosimamburu. But also that as this committee, we don't just go and file these reports. We need to have a process, a program of monitoring to make sure that there's constant improvement until one day we are able to say that we have established correctional services and not just correctional services in name. Page 14. no issue. Last page, 15. No issue. Our researchers, let's not file these reports. let's identify the issues raised, come up with the program of action, and make sure that this committee is seized with the monitoring and evaluation of what is being done, bearing in mind that the majority of the inmates are young people. We want to make them better people so that we really can create a better South Africa. Honorable Mutapo.
Thank you, Chair. I fully support you, especially when you look at 4.4.7, where the issue of criminal record is a very serious issue for many. So that statement is truly aligned to 4.4.7. Thank you. I fully support what you are saying.
We put the report. Anyone proposing? Honorable Majake.
Thank you, Chairperson. I move for adoption of the report as presented.
Any seconder?
Are we saying that the amendments will, with the amendments that are being made and all the emphasis that we're putting in,
with the amendments,
or shall we send it down, make sure that it will be there, or shall we?
No, the proposal for adoption with the amendment.
Oh, okay.
Yes, thank you for Honorable Mutap.
I support the adoption of the report with those amendments made.
Thank you, Honorable Breitenbach.
I'd love to make a counter proposal. I would love to see the report before I decide on whether I want to support it or not.
Can we take hands? Those who say we must adopt the report subject to the amendments made. One, two, three, four. And what is Honorable Masoli? Honorable members, it is a normal procedure of adopting a report subject to the incorporation of the corrections. So the majority accept that we. Bye-bye. Honorable members, thank you very much. Thanks for the committee for a job well done. I think this report will